Right, good evening. So, So we're looking at this, it's now coming to Shabbat Bamidbar, and we're going to be looking at a discourse which was taught on Shabbat Bamidbar 1957. And it concerns the concept of the camp in the desert. Now, if we have a look at the Torah text that we have, we've got here chapter 2. One second. Yeah, chapter 2, verse 2. Or chapter 2, the beginning of chapter 2, which is Shlishi in the Torah reading. It's not very clear that it's chapter 2. There's a number 2 over on the extreme left. Hi, how are you, David? So on the extreme left, it's got a number 2. That means it's chapter 2. So if we just look at the beginning of this chapter, so that's it's a few paragraphs in to the Torah portion of the Midbar. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron lemor. God spoke to Moshe and Aaron, saying, "Ish al diglo be'otot lebeit avotam. Each person should be by their ensign, their flag." By at the Levet Avotam, by their father's houses. Sorry, I'm just remember that this needs switching off. They should stand by their, they should be by their flags at their father's houses. Yachanu, that's how Bnei Yisrael, that's how the Jewish people should camp. Mineged, at a distance, saviv lo'el moed yachanu, around the tent of meeting, which means the mishkan, the sanctuary, they should camp. And then it gives the pattern of how they're going to be camping. V'hachonim kedma misracha, those who are camping on the east, degel machane Yehuda, should be the camp of Judah, Litzibotam, by their hosts. And then he gives the name of the Nasi, the leader of Yehuda, and it gives the numbers of how many there were, how many people. If we go on, V'hachonim alav Mate Yisachar, and together with him will be the camp of Yisachar, and he gives the numbers and the prince. Umate Zvulun, and it gives and their numbers. So that means you've got three tribes. Now let's just try and depict this. In the middle, there's the Mishkan. So the sanctuary, and the sanctuary goes from east to west. So there is the Holy of Holies of the sanctuary, and there's the like curtain. No, we don't have this curtain. Sorry. And slicha. Let me do that all again. We've got the sanctuary here with the Holy of Holies, and then we have the courtyard of the sanctuary there, and this side is the west. So there is the Holy of Holies, and there is the altar. And so what we've just heard is that there, let's use another color, that there are three tribes camped over here in the east, right? So who were they? The camp of Judah, Yisachar and Zebulun. Right?
So the north is downwards.
Yes. Wait a minute. Yes. Yeah. It's just that I normally think of it in this way. Normally we put north upwards, but right. So then we have another group of three tribes over here, another group of three tribes over here, and another group of three tribes over here. And in fact, Moshe and Aaron and the Levites, there's a further thing about the Levites, and Moshe and Aaron are over there. So and you have the Levites as well. So there's basically this square concept of the Mishkan, the sanctuary, and around the sanctuary are blocks of three tribes. And in fact, it says over here in verse 10, you've got Reuven and Shimon and Gad, and they are, one second, they're in the south, right? So so the south is over here. So we have the camp of Reuven, Shimon, and Gad, and so on. In the course of the next couple of pages, it gives all of them where they are all camping. Now, that is called the Diglei Midbar, the ensigns of the desert, the flags of the desert, because with each tribe, there was the flag of that tribe, and there were all the thousands of people who were there in this configuration. And this is a very, very mysterious spiritual concept in the middle of this parsha, of this Sedra of the week. And in fact, it's the dominant concept of the camp of the Jewish people in the wilderness. This is how they were grouped. And when they moved, there are two opinions. One opinion is that they moved basically in the same formation, and another opinion is they became a long line. But when they camped again, this is how they camped, and they always camped in the same position, right? And now this has a lot of significance relating to the Merkava, the divine chariot, which is the a prophecy, a prophetic vision that Yechezkel and Yeshaya, Ezekiel and Yeshaya, had these visions of the Merkava, and that relates to this, and it also relates to something that King Solomon made in the temple called the Yam Shel Shlomo. A big Yam means literally sea, but in this case it means a big basin, like a large basin where the Kohanim would wash their hands. And this basin was on the back of 12 bulls. And the 12 bulls are like these four groups of three, like the tribes around the sanctuary. And then we're going to see what the basin represents itself. So the graphics of the way in which people were positioned, in fact, is representing a spiritual transaction. And then we will try to explore what this spiritual transaction is in our own personal lives. Right.
The basin is on top of 12...
bulls, yeah, they're made of bronze. Okay. Otherwise they would waddle away.
Yeah. It's very curious that they should do the bulls in a, it's like an idol, it's an idol.
Yes, it's interesting. Yes. And it's really, it's a transformation of the animal dimension. The idol is when the bull is worshipped.
Right.
Here the bull is being utilized within divine service.
Okay.
And it's being transformed. And there are many aspects of Jewish teaching which are taking something which in itself looks as if it could be bad, or sometimes even is bad, but uses it in such a way to transform it and make it something positive and holy. But it's a very interesting point to mention that indeed the bulls, at the very time that the temple stood, there were two golden bulls which were set up the generation after King Solomon. So King Solomon made the temple with these 12 bulls. It was in Solomon's temple. And then in the next generation, the kingdom was divided, and Jeroboam, he made a golden calf in two places in Israel, so as to stop people going to the temple, they would go to the golden calf instead. So it's...
But that's a midrash, or is it in the sources, in the Makorot?
All this is in the Makorot. All this is in the sources about the bulls and the basin and Jeroboam and his golden calf.
Where were the bulls here? I missed
them. Well, we haven't come to them in this text, but they're in the Book of Kings when Solomon built the temple.
Mm-hmm. But it's not mentioned about the Mishkan.
No, it's not in the Mishkan. But in the discourse that we're going to learn, we will come across these bulls, and so I'm just preparing it. Some people are frightened of bulls, you know.
the bull is a symbol of strength as well. So it's got its positive sides.
Well, everything has a positive side. I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping bulls. You know, the bulls were part of the economy in ancient Israel.
Yeah.
And they figure a lot in the Talmud as possessions. People have a bull. The problem is the bull might gore something. And then there's a whole discussion who has to pay. Two oxen have a fight, one kills the other, and then how much do I owe you? My ox killed his ox.
And they were sacrificed too, weren't they?
They were part of the sacrifices in the temple. That's another point. The bulls and oxen were sacrificed in the temple. Okay, so that's an introduction to this discourse, which begins with the words Ishal Diglo from one of the verses that we read, and we'll have the melody of the discourse to help us enter the atmosphere. Oh, yam bam ba, yam ba yum bam bo, ha yam ba da yum ba yum. Oh, yam ba, yam bam ba yum bam bo. Ayiram baya, ayiram bayom, bayoyam, ayiram bayam bayom, ayiram bayam bayom, ayiram bay, ayiram bayo, am baya, am baya, ayiram bam, ho ya, am baya, ayiram bam, ho ya, ho ya, bam bom. Now, it's a very long discourse, and we're actually only going to be taking part of it, but I hope it will present a complete picture to us. Ish al diglo ba'otot lebeit abotam yachanu b'nei Yisrael. Each person or each tribe should camp by their signs, by their end signs, by their father's house. The Jewish people should camp mineged at a distance, saviv lo oel moed yachanu, around the tent of meeting. You see, here's the tent of meeting, the sanctuary in the middle, and they camp at a certain distance from it, and they're all around. Ve'itab midrash, it says in the midrash, right, which is in Bamidbar Rabba, and also Song of Songs Rabba. B'sha shenigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu El HaSinai. At the time that the Holy One was revealed at Mount Sinai, Yardu imo kavved revavot shel melachim. They descended with him 22 myriads of angels. Now, 22 myriads, a myriad is 10,000. So that's 220,000 angels. Vahayu kulam asuyim degalim degalim, and they were all grouped in a pattern, like in a troop, you could say. Shenema dagul dagul mervava, in a group by their myriad. Kevam sherau otam Yisrael, when the Jewish people saw them, like in a visionary experience at Mount Sinai, and they were able somehow to see these angels, and the angels are grouped in some kind of formation. So when the Jewish people saw them, shayu asuim degalim degalim, that they were in this formation with ensigns, so to speak. It doesn't actually speak about the ensigns of the angels. Here the word degel doesn't mean an ensign as much as the formation, the group, like in a particular pattern. Hitchilu mitavim litgalim. The Jewish people yearned to be in a similar formation. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, said to them, Chayechem she'ani memaleh mishaloteichem. By your lives, I'm going to fill what your request. Va'amar leMoshe, he said to Moses, Lecha se otam degalim kamosh nitavu. Go and make them into this formation the way they desired. Shezer ma shekatuv, and that's what's written in our parsha, Ishal diglo ba'otot. All of them by their ensign in this formation. And then he quotes another verse, which I think we're going to miss out, because that's really relating to the second section of the discourse that we're not going to do. But it's another reference to the spiritual formation of the angels above, Kugon Michael v'diglo, Gabriel v'diglo. Right, we're going over the page, like the angel Michael and his formation, and Gabriel and his formation. In other words, they're like groups of angels. Ukashem shahakol yireim min HaKadosh Baruch Hu min HaMelachim, and just as everyone in the world fears God and fears the angels, kach hayu yireim Yisrael. Thus, when the Jewish people were in this formation, the nations feared them as well. So lechach ne'emar ayuma kanitgalot, fearful, awesome, like this formation. V'hainu, and that means shemitzad inyan adgalim lemaila, because of this formation above, etzel hamelachim v'hakadosh baruch hu, with the angels and with God, shelazeh nitavu Yisrael, which is a thing the Jewish people yearned for, nitan atzivui al klalut inyan adgalim, there was given the commandment about this formation in the desert, as is explained in a discourse by the previous Rebbe. Skip a line to line 7. Sheyesh vazeh shelosha tzivuyim, there are three commands. Ha'aleph, the first one, ish al diglo. Hasheni ba'otot lebeit avotam. The first one is each person by his ensign. The second one is by standards by their father's house. V'hagimul meneged saviv lo'el moed yachanu. And the third one is at a distance around the camp, around the sanctuary they camp. Okay, so we may get to this explanation of these three concepts, but we're looking at the basic idea of the Jewish people camped in this formation, and this relating to the way the angels, in other words, it relates to a visionary experience or a visionary reality, that in this visionary reality there is this kind of formation somehow, and in this formation that is something to do with the gilui, with the revelation of God. And so therefore, when the Jewish people were camped in the desert and were moving through the desert with the sanctuary in the middle, they wanted to be, and they were put in this same formation themselves. Now, so then comes a question. All right? I mean, at first sight, what we've said so far, given that we're talking about spiritual visionary experiences, like being at Mount Sinai and things like that, and seeing visions of angels when we were at Mount Sinai. But it's an understandable concept that having this visionary experience and seeing this kind of aura around the divine presence, somehow expressed in terms of this kind of formation, that the Jewish people should want to imitate that, and that it should be implanted in us in some way, and that we would be imitating these groups of angels. Does that sound logical? Yeah. I think it's, you know, given that we're talking about spiritual things, it sounds perfectly logical. However, the Lubavitcher Rebbe has a question. Why on earth should we be bothered what the angels do? We are Neshamot Yisrael. Our souls are in fact more exalted than angels. It's written in Tanya that if there's 10 Jews in a, wherever it is, they could be playing poker. The Shekhinah is there. He doesn't mention poker, but he says, like, he mentions wrestling matches, but he doesn't mention poker. But he says, even if they're not praying and not studying, they're just sitting around talking. The divine presence is there, because whenever there's 10 Jews, there's the divine presence, and an angel would tremble to be in their presence. We go on playing poker or whatever we're doing. But the angel would tremble. So, why should we yearn to be like the angels? We should recognize we have a spiritual power which is greater than that of the angels. In fact, it says of the angels, I'm telling you things it doesn't, it's not written in here, but it's written elsewhere. An angel is very, very exalted, but it's considered motionless compared with the soul of the Jew, which is able to move from one extreme, which is able to move. Now, in what sense is the angel motionless? The angel is actually moving. It's moving higher and higher. But it can only go step after step. We, Jewish souls, can move from one extreme to the other, which the angel can't do. We can move, we can be in the depth of despair, God forbid, or doing the most negative things. And then the next moment, everything changes round and we're in a completely different mood, doing something else. Whereas the angels are sort of stuck in whatever they are. Michael is a kind angel, chesed, kindness, and Gabriel is a severe angel. And so they've all got whatever their task is, that's what they've got. They have some sort of spiritual reality, but they are fixed. We are free. We are multitasking and have all kinds. We are able to combine spiritual paradoxes, which angels can't achieve. So there we have the question, which is here on line 9 of Pev Zayin. But tzarich lahavin, we have to understand. Mao ainyan. What is this idea, שכאשר ראו ישראל את המלאכים, when the Jewish people saw the angels, שהיו עשויים דגלים דגלים, and they were arranged in a formation, התחילו מתאבים לדגלים, they began yearning for formation, the same kind of formation. הרי הנשמות הם למעלה מהמלאכים, souls, Jewish souls, are higher than the angels. ואם כן איך שייך שיתאהבו לעניין הדגלים שישנו אצל המלאכים. So why should they long for something which the angels have? אך כללות העניין בזה, but the general idea of this is, שיש הפרש בין המלאכים עצמם, there's a difference between the angels themselves, לעניין הדגלים שבמלאכים, to the formation that the angels were in. In other words, the formation that the angels were in, that was something significant. It's not that it's angels who were in that formation. It just happens that it was angels, but they were in that formation, and that formation was something special. That pattern was something special. The Be'emet, HaNeshamot Heim Lemayla Ma'amlachim, because in fact the souls are higher than the angels. U'mashnatavu Yisrael HaRezer Rak L'inyan Etgalim Shebemelachim, the Jewish people yearned for this formation which happened to be expressed by the angels. Uchdik Lushon Midrash Michael B'diglo, Gabriel B'diglo, Inyan Etgalim Dafka. As the Midrash puts it, it's the angel Michael, Michael, and his formation, his troop, Gabriel and his troop. It's the concept of these troops, this pattern of troops, of tribes grouped in this pattern. That's what they wanted. So there's something mysterious and desirable, spiritually desirable, about this pattern. Not just because the angels have it, but it's the angels revealed it. There are other things which we see, like, as it were, secrets that the angels have, and which somehow the Jewish people get hold of that secret. You know, so it's not exalted because it's the angel that has it. It just happens that the angels have it. We're coming towards Shavuot, and in the Talmud there's a very interesting argument between the angels and God about whether the Jewish people should have the Torah. The angels don't really have the Torah themselves, but they seem to have some kind of veto about whether it should be given to the Jewish people. And when Moses comes up Mount Sinai and the angels see that he's going to be getting the Torah, they say to God, "What are you doing? Giving the Torah to people, human beings, they're going to mess it up. Why should you give them the Torah? Keep your glory in heaven." So God says to Moshe, give them an answer. Moshe says, "I don't know what to answer." So God says, "Take hold of my kisei hakavod, take hold of my throne of glory, and you'll know what to say." So Moshe took hold of the throne of glory and he knew what to say. Do you remember what he said? What would you say?
Yeah, I think I heard this.
Go on, say.
He says to the angels, the Torah says you have to honor your parents and you don't have parents.
That's right.
And things like this. And the Torah says you have to keep Shabbat, but you don't have to work. So how, can you keep Shabbat if you don't work? Like physical worldly things. Because you're angels, it doesn't apply to you.
Absolutely. Quite right. See, he was able to prove that the Torah goes to human beings, not to angels. Because the Torah talks about physical things, having parents, and then not to steal, and things like that, and keeping Shabbat instead of working. So the angels had to accept this, and so the Torah was given. So we see this sort of interplay with angels. Here, the angels have this concept of formation, a spiritual formation, and that's what the Jewish people wanted, and that is what was granted to us in this week's parsha, this week's section. Okay, so now we're on section Bet, line 18. Vayinyan bezeh. Now, what is this saying? Dihine inyan edgalim shebemlachim. The concept of these four. These four groups of the angels, who inyan arba chayot shebemekava, concerns the four angels of the chariot. Shekol echad mehem kalun mishalosh, each one of them includes three. Vehem yudbeit baka, and they are the 12 oxen. Now, two images are being merged at this point. The Merkava is an image which we have in the first chapter of Yechezkel. It's actually of Ezekiel. It's actually going to be the Haftorah on the first day of Shavuot. On Shavuot, which is going to be a Wednesday in 2 weeks' time.
7th of June.
I think, yes. That's right. Wednesday, 7th of June, 8th of June. Wednesday, 8th of June, is going to be the first day of Shavuot, and in the morning of that day, in the synagogues, there will be reading the Ten Commandments, and the sages tell us it's just like reenacting the Ten Commandments. It's a beautiful experience to be in the synagogue at that point, bearing in mind that it's a reenactment of the Ten Commandments. And after the reading of the Ten Commandments, there's the Haftorah. There's always a section read from the prophets. And the section which is read is the first chapter of Yechezkel, which is about the Merkabah, about this heavenly chariot. Now, the chariot, I can't draw, because we're not allowed to draw the Merkabah. The Merkabah is something very spiritual, which we're not supposed to draw. But what I can describe it to you, if you read it in the, if you get the Hebrew of the Haftarah, the English translation, it's very, very beautiful. And basically, it's Ezekiel who sees it in somewhere in Babylon, where he and the Jewish people are in exile, and he's by the river Kavar, and he suddenly sees this fascinating thing, where there are four angels. Now, each angel is like, so to speak, like a post, like a pillar. And the angel has actually four faces. That's not mentioned over here. And of those faces, three are the faces of a lion, an eagle, and an ox. And the fourth face is of a man. And the feet, this multiple-faced angel ends in a single foot, a single hoof. And it's got wings. The angel has wings. Also, underneath the angel, each angel is something that looks like, it's called ofanim. And that's the word for a wheel. Today, ofan. And it talks about ofan betocha ofan, wheels within wheels, and the wheels are covered with eyes. Because this is some kind of divine expression, and it's some kind of representation, even though God has no form, it's some kind of representation of divine power and knowledge. So under each of these posts is a kind of wheels within wheels covered with eyes. And then on top, these four posts are kind of holding a platform. And on the platform is a throne. And on the throne, Ezekiel can see, the legs of a man who's sitting on the throne. Then he can't see any higher than that. So this is like some kind of revelation of that which cannot be revealed. In fact, it's a very mystical passage in the Torah, in the Tanakh, in the Bible. And the Mishnah speaks about study of this. It's called the Merkavah, the chariot, because it's a kind of a chariot. Like they're the posts with wheels, so it's a kind of a chariot, as if it would move along. And there's some kind of aspect of the divine which is riding the chariot. That's so the sages say this is very sacred, and you have to be very careful how you study it and how you teach it and things like that. But that became a very important part of Jewish mystical thought. Yordei Merkavah, those who go down into the chariot. It's like a whole mystical practice.
So just to go over something, there are four angels who are like the posts, and each one of them includes three?
Now, that's the thing, because in this text, it now says that there are four angels, and each one of them includes three. Let's just see if the commentary over here says anything about them.
Did you say lion, eagle, ox, and man?
Yeah.
That would be four.
Yes.
That was what I was asking as well.
Yeah, let's just have a look at the commentary on the left, line 44 of the commentary. These four forms which were carrying the chariots, they're in the form of a man, an eagle, a lion, and an ox. Each one of them includes three. Each one of these angels or figures includes extra dimensions. And according to that, the number of faces is actually 12. So in other words, there's some way in which the four, see, really, if you say they've got four faces, then it's 16.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how exactly it works. It could be that you only consider the animal images, the eagle, the lion, and the ox, which is there, not the man. The man is like another dimension.
It's definitely the case that every one of those four is definitely one of these four. It's not that there's like one of them is a lion. And
no,
one of them is,
no, okay, no. Each one is four. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Each one is four.
Okay.
Yeah. But this somehow elides, it somehow joins together with another image. And the other image is of this basin made by King Solomon. And so if we go back to the text, these are the 12 oxen. Gimel pon, shlosha ponim tzefona, three of them pointing to the north, ushlosha ponim yaman, three of them pointing to the west, ushlosha ponim negba, three of them pointing to the south, ushlosha ponim mizracha, and the other three pointing to the east, and that is in 1 Kings 7:25. So I just brought along a little Tanakh. 1 Kings 7:25. This is describing the temple which King Solomon made, and and it's talking about how this large basin was made. He made the basin of cast. It was 10 cubits from one edge to the other, round, 5 cubits high, and 30 cubits round. And there's a funny word there. And the Vilna Gaon actually makes a whole thing that if you take this words, you get to a very exact measure of pi. It looks as if it doesn't have our understanding of pi, because it's a diameter of 10 and a circumference of 30. And actually pi is 3.14 something. But if you take this extra word which is there, which is written in one way and pronounced in another way, and you sort of use that in some interesting way, you get a measure of pi, which is a very precise
number. Which word?
It's another word, which is here, the kav and the line. The kav, yeah. But it's a matter of taking, it's got an extra letter in it. It's got vav kav, vav kuf, vav he. And but you don't pronounce the hey, so it's something like you take the way it's written over the way that it's pronounced, like make a fraction out of it and multiply that by 30, and through that you get the or something, you get the 3.14. You get the measure of pi. It's some interesting observation about this. That's why this passage is particularly famous. Anyway, well, that's one of the reasons. So there you have this bowl, and it's standing on 12 oxen, three of them pointing to the north, three to the east, and so on. So the bowl is standing on these oxen, so we're going to have some kind of... The bowl we can draw a picture of, if we could only do a picture. Because this bowl is something significant in understanding a whole Kabbalistic connection. So I think if we had, yeah, so I suppose blue would be a suitable color for the bowl. Okay. And we then have, I'm not going to be able to draw these very well. Now the point is the oxen are facing us. See, the oxen face us, So there's three over there, and then there's somehow three over there, and three over there, and then three at the other side that we can't see. Okay, so that is the bowl. Okay, it's an image which we can imagine.
There's only one bowl, or there was
one bowl, one big bowl, one big brass bowl. One big brass bowl. In the second temple, they had a bowl, but it didn't have oxen like this. It was just on a stand. And since it was in modern times, comparatively, it was several hundred years later, they had taps on the bowl. That was in the second temple. But in the first temple, they didn't have taps. It was a bowl.
So I was going to ask, does this perform the function of like the kiyo in the Mishkan?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's the in the sanctuary there was a thing called the kiyo, which was a basin.
Yeah.
And that basin was for the kohanim to wash their hands.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this had the same function. Right. So there we have these oxen. Vahayam, line 21. Vahayam aleim milamaila, and the basin was on top of these oxen above. Vehem nosot umunusaot im hakisei, and they are carrying and are carried by the throne. Now you see, there's a mysterious thing happening here, is that he's mixing together the two images. It's like an interface of the image from Ezekiel and the image from Kings. In the book of Kings, you've got the basin with the 12 oxen. And in Ezekiel, you've got the chariot with the four angels, which are somehow triple. There's some triple aspect to them. And so therefore, they come out to like the 12 oxen. And the angels have a platform, and on the platform is a throne. Now, in discussing the image, the vision of Ezekiel, are they carrying the throne? Or is the throne carrying them? You see, it's the throne represents some higher level of the divine. So on one level they are carrying the throne, that's what it looks like. It's a chariot with posts and wheels and a platform, and on the platform is a throne. But this is the divine throne. So it's actually the throne is carrying them. See, this is the mysterious quality over here. Remember that when King David was taking the ark, the golden ark with the tablets of stone in it, and he was taking it somewhere, and someone thought it was going to slip off the cart. It had been put on a cart, which it shouldn't have been anyway, but someone thought it would slip off the cart, and they moved their hand to put it right, and they were struck dead. The point being that the ark actually carries itself. So they are carrying and are carried by the throne. Vahainu, and that means, line 22, She'ime yotam lemata me'ayam, even though these oxen, which are like the angels, are lower than the basin, as it says. Hi Nigel, how are you? Lovely seeing you. Very lovely seeing you. As it says that the basin is above, is upon them from above. Right, okay, we're just over there somewhere. Lovely seeing you. Okay, Nigel, can you see this picture? This picture represents a bronze basin, a large basin, and there are 12 bulls. You weren't here when I drew them, so you won't recognize them. You can see them now. They're 12 bulls. Their backs are underneath the basin, and their heads are sticking out. So there's three over here. Three over there, we can only see one of them, and three over there, we can only see one, and three at the other side, we can't see at all. but they're those formation of bulls, and there's a big basin, a copper basin on them. They're made of copper. They're all made of copper or bronze. And the basin is on top of them. And that represents a formation of angels that is in the book of Ezekiel. And that itself also relates to the formation of the Jewish people camped around the sanctuary, which is in Al Sedra this week. So you've got this whole idea of this kind of pattern. Four groups of three. That's the thing. Four groups of three. Four groups of three, whether it's the Jewish people camped around the sanctuary, the angels in the book of Ezekiel, which is somehow four times three, even though it's not quite obvious how it's three, and in the temple with the four groups of three bulls under the basin. So there we have the basin on top of them. V'heim lemata mibchinas adam. Now, they are lower than man, these oxen. Shahari nikhaim b'shem chayot u'behemot. They're called animals. Mikol makom, nonetheless, hareheim nosim et hayam, they are carrying the basin, shomed aleim milamayla, which stands on them, v'nosim gam et hakisei v'adam sh'ala kisei levchinat lo adam. They also carry, in the other image that I can't draw, or I don't think I can draw. I could have asked a Shaila on the way. They're always questioned. They also, you see, merging the two images somehow, they are also carrying the platform, and on the platform there is the throne, and on the throne is the form of a man, which, as it were, the higher level is beyond man, is not a man. And this form of a man, it's not really the form of a man at all. It's a kind of an image which relates to the divine, but it's not the divine, because the divine has no image. So it's like a lower dimension of imagery of the divine. I mean, this is the mysterious thing about the book of Ezekiel. Va'inyan b'zeh, last line. Now what this means is the Imayot Shemalachim onto page Chet. Even though these angels Yardu Lamata Yoter went down to the lowest level, you got picture. Mikol Makom B'Shosham Hei Mipchinot Nalet Yoter. Even though these animals go down to a lower level than man, in their root they are higher. Now here we have a paradoxical idea that we have again and again in Kabbalah and Chassidut. I think the paradox is there in Kabbalah, but it doesn't dwell on it. Chassidut takes this paradox and makes a big fuss of it. You see, we have different levels of existence. And the higher level of existence was not able to keep. It was unstable. This higher level of existence is called Olam HaTohu, the world of Tohu. What does Tohu mean?
Chaos.
The world of chaos. So there's a very exalted world of chaos. Now that world of chaos is a realm of infinitely bright radiance, divine radiance. And the nature of existence is that in order for God to create existence, there has to be some way of containing the radiance. The radiance is so powerful that existence it will be exploded by the radiance. So the radiance has to be contained. And the way in Kabbalistic thinking that the radiance is contained is through kelim, vessels. There's some kind of svira, some kind of way in which the energy of the radiance is held back. And the keli, the vessel, is described as coming into existence through hit avut ha'or, through a thickening of the light. Some way in which the radiance is contained. This is a very important aspect of human life as well, that very often we have intense energy inside ourselves and we need ways of containing that energy. The problem with the world of chaos is that the energy was too powerful for the vessels. And as a result, there's something called Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessel. And that is the beginning of all the negative aspects in the world. The very fact that physicality conceals godliness, and that many aspects of the world can lead us astray completely, away from godliness, doing the opposite of the divine will, is all because of the energy that is scattered through the world in this chaotic way. So the forbidden thing, which looks so attractive and can be so compelling, indeed has an exalted radiance in it, but the exalted radiance has got into the wrong position, and therefore it is acting in a very, very negative way.
Is it trying to ask a question?
Yeah.
I just didn't follow the last five words that you said.
There's an exalted radiance in a forbidden thing, something which is forbidden. Let's say forbidden food. So the food is forbidden. Actually, there's an exalted radiance in physical food as well, in permitted food. So for some reason, I've started with a forbidden food. Okay, so let's keep on with forbidden food for a moment. So the forbidden food has got an exalted radiance in it, but the way that we elevate that radiance is by not eating it, or not doing it. Whatever it is we're not supposed to do, we hold back. That elevates the radiance. The radiance is in exile. By us not giving in to that thing, there's a pressure, an emotional, even a weird kind of spiritual pressure, to do the wrong thing, God forbid, and we hold ourselves back. We're not going to do it. That redeems the spark of radiance which is in that forbidden action or thing. You're not sure?
Sorry, just a bit slow. I'm not. It's a concrete example. You talk, like an actual fruit. If you're talking about,
well, let's say
non-kosher meat. Or
yes,
something.
Yeah. A person is hungry, and they can't find a kosher restaurant. So they start looking around, and in fact, there's only one restaurant altogether. So they think, all right, so I'll get an apple or this and that. No, sorry, we got no fruit. No. So what do you have? All we sell here are hamburgers. That's all that this restaurant serves. What, you got nothing but hamburgers? You have a banana? No, no. only hamburger. And your stomach is gnawing inside you. And you look at the hamburger and it looks so inviting. As only a hamburger, a non-kosher hamburger, knows hamburger. Actually, it doesn't look inviting. But anyway, there it is trying to appeal to you. And you say, no, thank you. And you leave the restaurant. And just then, well, so what happens is, because you left the restaurant, the spark of radiance in the hamburger is elevated. But 2 minutes later, you meet a friend of yours who says, hey, what are you doing around here? Come right to my house. I'll give you a cup of coffee and a kosher sandwich. You know. So it's all, you don't have to go hungry after. Let's hope. That's a good end. Someone once described to me a whole day where he had to go for a business meeting in Birmingham. And at every stage, he was not able to get kosher food. And he went hungry and hungry and hungrier. And finally, he got home starving. It was like on the train home, he thought, at least he'll get some kind of thing. No, the only thing, they had ham sandwiches. That was the only thing they had. And he didn't have it. And I was very moved by it. For some reason, I started off with the forbidden thing, but let's take the thing which is permitted. It's Shabbat, it's Friday night, and there's the most beautiful food on the table. which you have cooked or you've organized somehow. There it is. This beautiful food on the table, and the table there is Shabbat candles and wine for Kiddush. It's a beautiful atmosphere. Now the radiance which is in that food is a spiritual radiance which is now being elevated. It's a radiance which comes from an exalted level. It comes from this world of chaos. But it is now going to be elevated in a very, very positive and beautiful way, because it's part of keeping Shabbat, or just keeping oneself alive in a kosher way, following the laws of kashrut. I'm using the image of kosher food, but it's every aspect of life. Every aspect of life is included in that. So there is the beauty of this transaction that is taking place, that everything we do is in some way elevating radiance to the divine. So these oxen, which on one level are lower, you see the image here is that the man is like, we are somehow positioned above these oxen. And the oxen are lower than us, but through them we are able to rise to a higher level. Because they represent this energy which has come from an exalted source, from the world of chaos, so that is able to elevate us. And we elevate them. It's like a dual, it's a dual interaction. We elevate them by taking their energy and using it in a positive way for Torah mitzvot, which might be the negative mitzvah of do not eat that food, so we're not eating it. So by keeping the negative mitzvah, we elevate that spark. But also, they are giving us more spiritual energy in what we are doing.
And that what you just said applies to the bulls and also the angels?
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah, because the angels represent, the angels in the chariot of Ezekiel represent the spiritual energy which infuses the world. So the ox represents all the animals, the domestic animals. The lion represents the wild animals, and the eagle represents the birds. Where the fish fit in, maybe it's with the eagle, I'm not sure. And then you have the face of the man, which represents the animal aspect of the person themselves. But their divine aspect is the man who is on the throne. The figure of the man on the throne is the divine aspect of the individual. It's the divine aspect of the individual. Okay, it's a very...
a lot of terms. So, but sorry, just one question. Does that everything on this earth comes from the world of chaos?
Well, the world of chaos.
Are we also from the world of chaos?
Yeah, you see, the world of chaos was the first stage of creation. Yeah. And then that there came the breaking of the vessels. Then comes the second stage of creation. That's why the Torah begins with a bet, because it's the second stage, Bereshit, in the beginning. So there is the second stage of creation. But because there was this first stage which has this problem, that's why things were so likely to go wrong. That's why when Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden, they do something wrong straight away. Because there is this forbidden energy. See, why should Adam and Eve disobey God? It's like an irrational thing. But if we understand that there was a magnetism pulling them to the negative action, so we can understand that because of this complexity in existence. Yeah. Okay. All right, so there we have this realm of chaos. The Ilu Adam, now Adam, this is on line 2, the human being, Hu Begematria Ma, he in the numerical value of the word Adam, Aleph is 1, Dalet is 4, and Mem is 40, makes 45. Now, 45 is actually one of the ways of writing the name Yud-Ke Vav-Ke, the divine name, where you spell it out. Yud-Vav-Dalet, and I think it's Hey Aleph, Vav-Vav, and then Hey Aleph, is it that? With a vav aleph vav, yud ke vav ke with vav aleph vav. So when you add all that up together, I think comes to 45. So in other words, you spell out the name yud ke vav ke, and it comes to 45. The shem ma hu shoresh olam atikun. Now this name Adam, which means our responsibility, is the world of healing. The world of tikkun, that's the opposite of the world of chaos. There's the world of chaos and the world of healing, the world of putting right. And what we have to try to do is put right the world. That's the task which we have. Our job, being in the world, facing all the temptations and paradoxes and problems of the world, is in order to put the world right. And so we're surrounded by the radiance of the world of chaos, which is attracting us in all kinds of different directions, and we have to carefully pick our path among this, as the Torah tells us. This you can eat and that you can't eat. This you can do and that you can't do. And by doing all this in the right way, we are connecting spiritual forces, spiritual energy, back to the realm of tikkun, the realm of healing and of rectification and of putting things right, so that everything fits together in the right way and we make a world of beauty and holiness. Alright, so that's the process that we're in. V'im kein, and if so, amelachim she'im olam ato. So therefore the angels which have this quality coming from the world of chaos, heim lemayle mibchinat adam shehu me'olam ha'tikun, in a certain sense they're higher than the man who is from the world of tikkun, from the world of healing. And therefore they carry the throne and the man who is on the throne, which is our spiritual self. Omnom, however, so because I think we can imagine somehow, you know, we can have some kind of that there's this let's just write the letter Adam. Okay? So there is the Adam higher. Now it's somehow merged. It's with the picture of the basin, but really it's the image of the chariot in Yechezkel. And that's because we need this basin, because the basin represents Malchut. We're going to come back to that. So you can read it, yeah? Adam. So they've got the power to carry Adam, because within them is a very exalted form of radiance from Olam HaTohu. So there's, from the world of chaos, there is this kind of energy within the bulls, within the angels which are here in the world, and that is able to lift, to carry the man, which is our spiritual identity. Omnom, however, line 6, kol zehu mitzad shor sham bilvad, that is only because of the root of these oxen, these angels. Ma she'en kein la'achadei shvirat ha'kelim she'naflu lamate yoter, but after the breaking of the vessels, when they fell down to a very low level, they are actually on a lower level. So on one, because of their root, they've got a spiritual energy which can elevate the man. But in practical fact, these are animals which are lower in the world, and they represent a lower dimension. And that's where we have the idea of this formation that the Jewish people were in, the ensigns and the pattern of the camp of the Jewish people. Michael v'diglo, Gabriel v'diglo, the angel Michael and its troop, Gabriel and its troop. The inyan hadgalim u'inyan itkalalut. The idea of having these troops is the idea of integration. Lo rak itkalalut ze mizeh, not only each one including the other. Ela ba'ofen shel bitul b'mitziyut. The idea of some kind of selflessness. That's what it means by their father's house. There's some way in which each member over here, that's very interesting. You see, if you look at the ordinary idea of people standing in troops, you know, like an army. So army units, you know, the army unit has to be very powerful and forceful, and they're very conscious of themselves as a unit. And I don't know what it's like in the Israeli army, but a little bit I know about the British army. They're very clear, they identify themselves very strongly. The name of the unit, the colors of the unit, all these different things. And there's a strong competitive dimension. You know, I mean, normally they're in battle, you know, fighting together. But there are plenty of sports and things where they are actually opponents to each other. However, this Kabbalistic concept of units is quite different, that they integrate together. They're integrated together, and they have a kind of a sense of selflessness. And through their quality of selflessness, see, the reason why they're selfless, if you imagine the Jewish people in the desert, where's their real self? In the Holy of Holies. They can feel the Divine Presence there. So the Divine Presence in the Holy of Holies, that's their reality. So when they're standing in this group, they are absorbed in a collective oneness. That would certainly be the ideal. Unfortunately, we find in a few chapters along, Korach has a whole argument with Moses. You know, they weren't all so selfless as it would have been nice for them to be. But if you imagine that they are supposed to be in this very spiritual situation where they all feel this intense selflessness, and because of that they're able to bond with each other. So the fact of having them in this pattern of different groups, four groups of three, is actually a way in which they are all able to group together. Now in the last part of this paragraph, he explains the fascinating idea that the difference between the world of chaos and the world of repair is that in the world of chaos there were different sphirot, different divine emanations, but each one was completely separate from the others. Because they were completely separate, they could not combine, and because of that they couldn't contain the energy of the radiance. In order to contain the energy of the radiance, there has to be some kind of intermingling of different forces, black and white, the severity and love. Severity and love, those have to be able to join together. If a person has a very black and white view of existence, things are either good or bad, and they see everything in this like totally compartmentalized way, it's more difficult for that person to experience difficulties and challenges in life, because very often we are faced with paradoxes. It's not simple good or bad, it's a mixture. And dealing with that mixture and knowing how to respond to that situation, which is not clearly one or the other. It may be right that we should respond in this way, or maybe we should respond in the other way. But the complexity of life demands from us that we should have a kind of a complex inner structure where there is kindness and there is severity and there is mercy and there is victory and there is submission and there's dedication. These are the different qualities of the Sfirot, of the divine emanations, and they all have to be combined together. Like now we're in the time of the counting of the Omer, so each aspect of the Omer, like kindness, within kindness there are all the other seven aspects. So you've got kindness of kindness, severity of kindness, mercy of kindness, and so on. So all together, 7 times 7 is 49. That's how we have the 49 days of the Omer, one by one, until the 50th day will be Shavuot. So therefore there has to be this integration, and through the integration we're able to absorb this upper radiance. The next paragraph down, which is on line 20, on page Chet, of this Dvar Malchut edition of this discourse. V'alderech ze yuvan gam b'inyanat galim v'shvatim. We can understand this also about the banners and the formation of the tribes. Dinei ha'shvatim heim mekavta ta'a. the 12 tribes of Israel are the lower chariot. And the distinction between the patriarchs and the chariot and the tribes. Shavot heim kaftai la datzilut. The patriarchs, Abram, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, those seven qualities, that represents the upper chariot of Atzilut, of the world of emanation. And the 12 tribes, who are the children of Jacob and Rachel, Leah, etc., they are the lower chariot of the lower worlds, creation, formation, and action. So you see, here we have four levels of world, and the tribes, these are four groups of three, these are the tribes. These represent the formation in the lower three levels of world, while the higher level of world, Atzilut, that's the patriarchs. That's the patriarchs and the matriarchs.
It's interesting, it counts them as the people you said, the fathers and the mothers, because normally I hear it as just Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I was using a little bit of poetic license, I must say, because he just said that the patriarchs are in the world of Atzilut, whereas the tribes are in the lower realm, the lower three worlds. So with the patriarchs go the matriarchs.
Okay.
You can't have a patriarch without a matriarch. That's part of the equation. Ubapchatot hi ol merkabad olam habriya. In the general way that it's understood, the tribes, the 12 tribes, they are the chariot of the world of creation. And let's turn over the page. They are, whichever world they're in. Yeah, so they're in the world of creation, and also there's the lower worlds as well. Well, the patriarchs, and as far as I'm concerned, the matriarchs are all in that upper realm. But now we're going back to this basin. Now the basin, this is at the top of page 10.
10 or 9?
Oh, sorry. Tet, which is 9. Yeah. And it's the beginning of the page. Top of page. Tet. Top of page 9. Now these spiritual forces, which are these oxen, angels, they carry this basin which stands on them above, the Kayal Prinat Malchut Atzilut. This is the attribute kingship of the world of emanation, the highest world. And this is a very profound thing. Now it's Kafish Naset Atik Lebriya. It's the basin, it's the lowest part of the world of Atzilut and the highest part of the world of creation, which comes below. So these are in creation, but the basin is at the bottom of the world of Atzilut, the world of emanation. Vahari Ofana Itavut V'derech Helen V'Hesta Boreh Me'an Yivra. The way that existence comes into being is through the Creator concealing Himself. That's something fascinating. In order to make a world, God has to, in a sense, hide Himself. Because if God reveals Himself, the world just dissolves away. It just wants to be part of God. So in order for there to be a world where God is hidden, which conceals God in any way, which is what we mean by ha'olam, which is the same letters as he'elem, concealment. The world is a kind of concealment of God. God has to hide Himself. And by hiding himself, the world comes into being. It's fascinating. It's the opposite to the way we would expect. We would think God reveals himself in order to make the world. But in fact, God is everywhere at the beginning. In order to make the world, God has to hide himself. And that enables the world, as we understand world, or even as Kabbalists understand world, on a higher level, that's the way the world comes into being. So there is this quality of concealment. Because God hides himself, that's why we feel our own identity. We feel our own ego. I want this. I want that. Why did he do that to me? Why didn't she smile when she's... You know, we're very much focused on our own honor and our own metziyud, our own existence. We're very focused on our own self. Why? Because God is hidden. If God were revealed, the only thing we would look at is God. We would be more conscious of God than of our own self. Umishum zeh, and because of this, צריך לרומם ולהעלות את ספירת המלכות שתתעלה בעולם הצילות. And therefore, the quality of kingship, this basin can be on a sort of a lower level. This is how I understand it. It can be on a lower level, which means it's part of the lower world. But we have to sort of lift it up and keep it in the higher world, or bring it into the higher world of Atzilut. And that is the elevation of kingship. As it says, Aramimcha Elokai HaMelech. Now, Aramimcha Elokai HaMelech, I will lift you up, my God, the King. Now, this is in Ashrei, which is a psalm which is said every day whenever we pray. Shachrit or Mincha, not every time. Shachrit or Mincha, the morning and the afternoon service. And the idea of lifting up this quality of kingship into a higher level. Hina Aliyah zu naset al yedei ha-shvatim. It's the tribes who are on a higher level. They are able... they're on a lower level. The tribes... Even though the tribes are on the lower level, which is lower than kingship of Atzilut, lower than kingship, nonetheless, because the tribes have the ability to reach to their root, and that's the word shevet, meaning a tribe, kochva de shavit. Do you know what a kochva de shavit is?
We see in the sky, I think, some falling stars.
Yeah, a shooting star. That's what it means here as well. It's a shooting star. So the Shevet, the tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel, are like Shevet is the name for a tribe. But there's a word for a shooting star. Kochav means a star. Kochav de Shavit is a shooting star. So that shooting star, that movement of light in the sky, that's what the Shvatim are, that's what the essence of the Jewish people are. And because of the spiritual power which is there at the root, we are able to lift up, we are able to elevate the quality of Malchut, of kingship. Now you see, it's talking here about our animal nature. It's our animal nature. That's what is meant by these tribes and the angels and the oxen. Our animal nature has got a tremendous potential. Yeah. And it's able to elevate the quality of kingship from a lower world to a higher world.
How much of it is like...
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. So therefore, we've got this whole image of the angels, the tribes, the quality aspect of the Sfira Malchut, which is this basin, raising it up to a higher level, the radiance which comes from the world of chaos, And all this is like the formation which is there in the desert, in the wilderness, around the sanctuary. Now, this sort of multiple image, with the image of the tribes in the desert, of the book of Ezekiel, and the book of Kings with the basin and the 12 bulls, this multiple image is now in the last paragraph that we're going to look at this evening. It talks about the last couple of paragraphs, how this applies to us as individuals and as Jews. Okay, so this is section 3. Va'inyan ba'avodahu. What does this mean in terms of personal service? Now we're going to translate these different qualities into actual our own psychological selves. Dehine ike inyan avoda hu tikun hamidot. The main focus of service is some kind of refinement of our emotions. Our mind is in order to refine our emotions, because our emotions can be negative, can be chaotic, can be problematic, or we can refine those emotions, and the emotions are appropriate. And when it's not appropriate, we don't feel that emotion, or we feel a different emotion. And so this refinement and transformation of the emotions, this is why the soul has come below. Because the soul in itself doesn't need to be transformed. The soul is in fact a spark of godliness. It's got a very sacred quality. The whole reason why the soul comes into the world and into our being is in order to refine the body and the animal soul. The animal soul is like these oxen. This is our own animal soul. Now the difference between the divine soul and the animal soul is that the divine soul is primarily mind, and the animal soul is primarily emotion. So we now go on to page Yud. And so just as it is in the case of the divine soul and the animal soul, that the divine soul descended in order to put right the animal soul, so it is for every single individual, that the mind is in order to put right the emotion. So you've got the divine soul and the animal soul is one pair, where the divine soul has to improve the animal soul. And the reason why we've got a mind is in order to help us improve our emotions. Now concerning improving the emotions, refining the emotions, it's not enough that we work on ourselves to organize love and fear of God. The main thing is that the love and fear which we get from above, that means we have to try to get, there's us working on our own emotions down here, but we also have to get the quality of emotion that comes from above. So that relates to the shooting star and the tribe. So the tribe, if we can see, there we have the 12 tribes, as it were, some kind of flow which is coming down, a spiritual flow which is coming down, a positive spiritual flow. Now that is a positive dimension of our own emotions. We've got the animal dimension down there, like the 12 oxen underneath, but we've also got something spiritual which is coming from above. We have to prepare ourselves so that we become a vessel for a more exalted kind of emotion. And so there is all the time a kind of an interaction between us and between God, that there is God giving us from above some kind of inspiration, and then we work on ourselves so as to be prepared, and then we get a further dimension from above. So there is this interaction taking place the whole time, where we are striving in this image, that we have these different kinds of emotions. And the emotions can't be black and white emotions. They have to be emotions which interconnect, which integrate. Otherwise, they won't be healthy emotions. They might be destructive emotions. So we have to, as it were, broaden our emotions and bring out their depths and connect with the spiritual dimension of emotion which comes from above. And through that, we are able to... page 11... So that's a thing that we're able to achieve with the emotions, that they become like a vessel. This vessel for what is flowing into it. That basin is a vessel, and something is flowing into that vessel. So this is like within ourselves. Within ourselves, that vessel within ourselves should be able to receive these higher spiritual dimensions, and in order to do that, we have to reach towards the divine, and the divine reaches towards us, and there's a whole interaction which takes place through the regular service of an individual connecting with God through the Torah, through the mitzvot of the Torah, through the mitzvot, this Torah study and prayer. All the normal dimensions of Jewish life are in fact ways of creating this kind of interaction of elevation and flow coming together. This coming together of the basin in the temple, which is like a receptacle, and the flow which comes from above into it. So in section Dalad, which is the last one that we will read to you this evening, Be'ezus Hashem, through this we can understand why the Jewish people yearned for this formation from the angels. Because that is the greatness of there, that they can see that they will be able to elevate the lower worlds to the world of emanation, to the world of Atzilut. Because it's this formation, right, of those oxen underneath the basin, is really this formation as well of the tribes around the sanctuary. This enables them to do an essential Kabbalistic thing of elevating the lower worlds and connecting them above. They're able to make this connection above by the fact of having this kind of organization. And especially as known that so that is why they yearned for this. Now, then comes a very interesting concept, that the souls who were with Moses in the desert, they went through all kinds of very, very difficult things. Now, Rabbi Isaac Luria tells us that they were a Gilgul of the souls who built the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel was a case of people coming together, being united together to fight against God in some sense. Let us be unified together, and we're going to fight against God. So God scattered them. Those people became the generation in the desert who were with Moses. What is happening to them over here? They are being unified together again in order to reveal godliness. So that is the tikkun. That is the repair. They're being unified together, and they have this whole structure around the sanctuary, and they represent the 12 bulls around the basin, and the whole purpose of that is in order to have a sense of oneness, so that there is able to be a tikkun, that the negativity should be transformed into positive, and the lower world should be connected with the upper world, and ultimately what that means is that all of the world should be united with God, and godliness should be expressed in the physical world, filling the world with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea, as it will be in the time of Mashiach. And so that really, here we just skip through to the end of the discourse, and that is really what they are trying to achieve, and that is why the Jewish people yearned to have the same structure as the angels, as is described in our Sedra of the Week.
It's a lot to take in.
And the interesting thing is the way that it's several different images all moving together,
yeah,
of the Jews in the desert and the pattern of their you know, many children in school like draw pictures of the way in which all the four groups of tribes, the three tribes in each point of the compass, and then there's the Levites, and then there's Moshe and Aaron. So that's one image. And then there's the other image of the chariot of Ezekiel, which is another dramatic, beautiful, dramatic image. And then there's the third image from the Book of Kings of the 12 oxen underneath the basin and lifting the basin. And then we have the Kabbalistic structure of the lower three worlds and the upper world of emanation, and then these different spherots, and the way in which the tribes represent a flow from above to below. So it's a fascinating mingling of different images of Jewish teaching.
In the Merkava, were there four Merkava, as it was it four?
No, it
four
was
pillars,
one.
Just one pillar.
No,
just
four pillars. But the four pillars
each had three.
Made a Merkava.